Hello, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us again for our continuing podcast series this summer, The Drive to Level 5. This has been the podcast series devoted to presenting the speakers at the Drive World Conference and Expo in Santa Clara, California, August 27th to 29th. That's a first-of-its-kind conference devoted to autonomous vehicles. For those of you who have been following us this summer, you know that we've been having on a number of presenters from the conference, and today it is Willard Tu, the Senior Director for Automotive Technologies at Xilinx. Willard, thanks very much for joining us today, and are you there?
Yes, I am, Jack.
So, Willard, before we get into the Drive World Conference and your responsibilities, your presentation and your talk, can you tell us a little bit about Xilinx and also, in addition to what the company does, tell us a little bit about what you do there?
Well, no problem. Well, first off, Jack, thank you for having me on your podcast.
Sure.
To kind of answer your question, I mean, you know, Xilinx is a semiconductor company, and what we're known for is creating devices, what we call field programmable gate arrays, FPGAs is what they're known for. But really, it's morphed into quite much more than that. It's really an SoC with flexible hardware that can be reprogrammed and create anything that you want to create with those devices, which is a very unique position in the industry. And then from a perspective of what, you know, my role in the company, I'm responsible for leading the automotive group within Xilinx. And I think that's one reason I'll be giving a talk at Drive World Conference and sharing the unique perspective that Xilinx has, because we play both in the ADAS, the advanced driver assistance systems, and the autonomous drive type systems as well. So we get to see the gambit of level zero all the way, obviously, to level five type systems in the automotive space.
So just to circle back to that for a second, and so our listeners have a clear understanding, the ADAS acronym, A-D-A-S, which is on your website, that stands for?
Advanced Driver Assistance System.
Right, Advanced Driver Assistance Systems, which is, if I understand the technology correctly, a bit of a step down from the full autonomous driving level five goal that the industry is trying to get to. Is that the correct distinction?
That's a correct distinction. I mean, the best way to put it is, if you think about it, a lot of the ADAS features are things like what we call forward-looking camera. And the forward-looking camera enables you to have what they call automatic emergency braking capability.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you adaptive cruise control capability. And there's other ADAS type of features like driver monitoring systems, surround view, e-mirror, you know, 4D imaging radar, LIDAR. All those are sense systems and or feature systems that are sold to the consumer. And again, Xilinx, we play very well in all the systems. We're generally either number one or number two in all those different categories.
I got it. You know, I'll share a personal story here very briefly. Last September, my wife and I bought a new car. I won't say the make and the model, but it was a 2016 vehicle. And although I did my research on it, although I had looked it up pretty thoroughly and I was very satisfied with the purchase, I guess I just hadn't fully appreciated what adaptive cruise control meant. So, you know, I've got my – where I live here in Connecticut, all of our highway speed limits are 55 or 65. So I'm setting the speed limit within that band, so to speak, and watching the car adjust automatically to the car in front of me. I will say it probably took me a month, and I do a fair amount of highway driving, to really like give over to it. You know, I'd be keeping my foot hovering over the brake pad.
Well, you wanted to build that confidence in the system, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. So that's a perfect entree to my next question, or next topic here. The technology is at one evolution, but psychologically speaking, you know, I couldn't be alone in that. Okay, build up the confidence, let the car do what the car is designed to do. Regardless of the evolution of the work your company does, where do you think the public is on something like this? Is it going to be a longer learning curve, or do you think people will just embrace it and say, hey, this is great?
I think you're going to get a gamut of different types of users. I mean, you know, I think generally, I think most of us want to feel very safe, and giving into technology sometimes can be difficult, right? Some of us do it because we have to, right? And you can think of an elderly person who may not have the full abilities to drive a vehicle. They're probably going to give in willingly because they just don't have that flexibility, that transportation. That's why we have a lot of companies trying to address transportation as a service. But for the rest of us that are maybe more able-bodied, we like to have a sense of control, and giving control up is always a little bit of a challenge. But part of it is the experience, right? I mean, none of us like to read the manuals, which is always the case. I mean, none of us read the smartphone manuals, right? And I know for certain most of us don't read the user manual for a vehicle because it's huge. But, you know, again, like you did yourself, you experimented with the technology, and it has to be fairly intuitive. I know that just like you, I've driven some other vehicles, and you know, rent-a-cars is a great example where you start to see some of these features. And it takes a little while when you have these automatic lane keeping features because they give you a little tug on the steering wheel, a little bit of feedback. And once you get used to it, you're like, hey, this is actually pretty good. So I think that the people that embrace the technology, it's just like when you had a keyless entry. You know, now you don't want to buy a car without keyless entry. I think it's the same thing for the adaptive cruise control. It's the same thing for the automatic emergency braking. Once you have a positive experience with that technology, you're going to embrace it.
The embrace it is a really good way to put it, because once I went through that, to your point, building confidence with it after about a month, I will say I love the feature. I love it. I turned it on, I set the cruise control, and I let the car do its thing. Now, speaking of cars doing its thing, and you talked about this here just a minute ago, transportation as a service. So your talk at the Drive World Conference is Thursday, August 29th at 11 o'clock. It's at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Transportation as a service is something I've been reading about, well, on and off for a few years. And putting aside for a second the economic implications, the legislative implications, purely in terms of the technology, where would you say we are? We've had people on this podcast series saying, well, we'll see if level five ever truly happens. We've had other people saying, oh, it's going to happen, no question. Where would you be between those two poles, if you would?
Well, I certainly think, based on my personal experiences, having driven in several level four systems, okay, I think level five will definitely happen at some point in time. I mean, the question is when, and when is it going to be affordable to the masses? I think that's always a much more difficult question to answer. But when you experience a level four system, I think you start to realize that technology is not that far off. And so I've been in test drives of several vehicles, and I've been impressed by their capability. So I think that's the first thing. Once again, it's have you had experience with it? And when you have experience with it, I think you get to be more convinced that it's going to happen at some point in the future.
And is it still a little too soon to say, oh, it'll happen by 2025, it'll happen by 2030, or is it more like we keep getting closer and it's really hard to say today when it will happen by? So we're just going to have to leave it at it's going to happen at some point.
It's going to happen at some point. Again, I think the question is, if you think the technology, you know, if you have unlimited technology resources, you know, I think, you know, 2030, I think it's certainly plausible. But at the same time, again, I think the question is more about the affordability of it, the ability for everybody to be able to afford it. That may be more difficult to figure out, but just the technology itself, I think we're really not that far away. It could be earlier.
I guess I'm kind of showing how little I know about cars. The adaptive cruise control that I have, as I mentioned, the car is a 2016. I didn't realize cars that quote unquote old already had that. And I didn't buy a high level luxury car. I mean, it's your basic
That's a great point that you're making, Jack. is that, you know, some of these ADAS systems have been around for a while, and the capability of these ADAS systems are continually improving. That's one reason why some developers like to use Xilinx technology, is that it has the flexibility to be reprogrammable at a hardware level and a software level, which allows the solution to kind of morph. And so the system that you have is probably a combination of a forward-looking radar and a forward-looking camera. So those two systems work together to kind of give it some level of redundancy. And that adaptive cruise control, I'm pretty sure your vehicle has also automatic emergency braking. And but automatic emergency braking, probably in the 2016 timeframe, was probably what they call just a head-on case, where if you're following a car and that car suddenly came to stop, you could come to a stop. Now, there's other variants of automatic emergency braking that include people at a crosswalk. So if now if a pedestrian is walking in front of you, your car will detect that and stop. It may include cyclists or motorcycles. All these other additional use cases make it much more difficult for the Tier 1s to create systems that are much more robust. So now if you buy a car today, you're going to get that AEB that has those other additional use cases. But I suspect for a 2016 model year that you were in, it probably just for sure did the head-on case.
Yes. Well, that's a terrific point, because for as much as I really like that feature and I use it every chance I get, and I'm sure you're very, very familiar with this, if I happen to be in the right lane on the highway and my adaptive cruise control is keeping me the correct length from the car in front of me, but here comes a car on my right coming up the on-ramp, and I can see we're matching speeds. If I don't do something, we're going to be side by side as his on-ramp lane ends, and he won't have room to move over. So I can see I have to move up or slow down, but in my 2016 car, it doesn't know that yet, that there's a car at about 90 degrees perpendicular to us.
That's the great thing about technology. It's going to, if we add more radar, it will certainly be able to do that. And that's what I think people would really love. Like you said, you still have to pay attention on your vehicle to be able to say, hey, I got to intervene on this particular use case. But if we add more sensors, more radars, more LIDARs, more cameras, that ability will certainly be there for you, and that way you can have a little bit more ease of a more positive experience in embracing that technology.
This is a little bit off topic, but a big surprise to me, and I guess this trend will only continue. When we bought the car, I said to my wife, you know, it's got to be added to our insurance policy, and our insurance rates went down. And I said to her, when we add the car, remember, this is a new car now. Well, we bought it, quote, certified pre-owned 2016, but our rates are going to go up, which she fully expected. And the woman who added the car to our policy said, no, that car's safety features are really good. Your rates go down. And I was thrilled.
That's the beauty of some of these new features. I mean, AEB is one of the really important automatic emergency braking. Is the one that really will prevent you potentially from most accidents that happen, right? I mean, it's not going to save you in every case, but it's certainly going to deter over the lifetime of your vehicle the probability of you being involved in an accident. And I think the insurance companies recognize that and reward that.
Well, ours certainly did, and I was very pleasantly surprised. And if I buy another car, I try to buy a car about once a century. I'm pretty cheap when it comes to buying cars, but if I get another one in the next, say, 5 or 10 years, I'll look forward to what that has. But you, Will, you've brought up a number of points now about the technologies and morphing together, and my car, for example, having probably a combination radar and camera. Your talk about transportation as a service, you really highlight that there's an artificial intelligence component to this, but then from a computational standpoint, there's a distributed versus centralized, there's a camera, radar, LIDAR, you know, there's a number of technologies that are either going to come together or evolve on their own to bring this more to fruition. I'm sure every one of these technologies is a talk and a lecture unto itself, but can you kind of give us a run through of the overall technologies and a little bit about the pros and cons or where you see them going?
Well, you know, you kind of did a good job setting that up. I mean, there's really kind of two worlds, right? There's a world where you've got the robotaxi world and you've got the ADAS world. And the ADAS world is kind of the Kaizen approach, right? Incrementally, I'm building a system like an adaptive cruise control capability, a driver monitoring capability, an automatic emergency braking capability. And each of these features and capabilities or systems are additive. And as some point in time, I'm going to add all these systems together on an incremental approach. And ultimately, at some point, I'll have this autonomous or driving vehicle or robotaxi. And then the other approach is kind of the moonshot approach, right, which is what we see a lot of the robotaxi companies, the likes of an Uber or a Lyft, you know, Waymo, all these different other companies who are trying to be first to offer transport mobility as a service. And from their standpoint, they're not just focusing on the step-by-step. They just say, hey, we absolutely are aiming for level 4 and level 5 type of system. And so for them, they have a much different approach. They're willing to spend a lot more money. You know, price is less of a concern. They're really focused on scaling up their engineering and driving innovation.
Okay.
Whereas the ADAS guys are much more focused on affordability and, you know, and the cost effectiveness so that the consumer can afford to pay for these type of features in a vehicle.
And those are things that are just going to evolve and sort of morph over time about which ones are most economically feasible in relation to which ones provide the greatest safety and ease of use. That's kind of an evolution that the industry still has in front of it, I would think.
Well, and in that approach too, the ADAS guys tend to be more edge or what we call distributed computing, okay? And
okay.
The robotaxi guys tend to be much more focused on centralizing their computing capability, right? So that kind of gives
okay.
you the differences right there. You've got distributed versus central.
And that's just a core distinction. Okay. Something that I don't know that we, the human race, learn well enough is that history is filled with examples of a great new way to do something or an exciting way to do something, but there are always unforeseen consequences, and quite often the required legislation to deal with those consequences is reactive. It's almost always reactive. And here's a perfect analogy since we're talking about automobiles. First, we invented the automobile. Then we realized, oh, wow, we need lines on the road. We need stop signs. We need traffic lights. But all of those things were reactive. Because of my little experience with the adaptive cruise control, I'm pretty excited about where this technology can go. But what is it possible to know now? What might be some of the risks where we're going to be facing that we don't face currently? There's always an unforeseen risk or consequence with a new technology.
Absolutely. I think, you know, unforeseen, unintended, all those things are things that happen when there is either a disruption or a transition in the industries. And in this case here, clearly we can see that there's some obvious things that could certainly happen that are kind of negative in terms of impact. I mean, there could be possible unemployment, which I don't think people want to kind of really discuss about. I mean, there's a taxi drivers could be displaced and trucking
yes.
drivers could be displaced. But at the same time, some of those industries, like the trucking industry, have talked about there's a shortage of drivers. So really, you know, at the very beginning time frame, I think the potential is to address some of the problems is the shortages in some of those industries. But as time goes on, if these deployments continue to grow and grow and grow, then maybe we're going to run into where we might have some displaced workers. But if the technology is introduced at a pace that's, you know, acceptable, I think we'll see people naturally morph into different jobs as well. I mean, because there's going to be new job creation as well. If there's displacement, there should be creation as well, right? So it kind of goes hand in hand. You can imagine if we're putting these vehicles on the road and they're driving, they're being utilized, you know, 60 to 80% of the time of the day, you can imagine that they need to be maintained a lot more. Right. So because most people spend maybe 45 minutes of driving time per day. Right. That's kind of the norm. So now you're using it maybe, you know, 20 hours of the day. That's a lot more wear and tear on the vehicle. I mean, certainly you're going to be making a lot more tires.
You kind of read my mind on a couple of topics there, but I do want to circle back, stay just for a second with some of the things about the risks. So you talked about worker displacement. Let's just put that aside for one second. As far as the autonomous vehicle or what level it gets to, this was a piece on 60 Minutes. I forget if it was last year or the year before, but there's Leslie Stahl, and she's in a vehicle where somebody with a laptop hacked into it and took over control of the car. Scared the hell out of her, which is not a criticism. I'd be pretty scared too, I think. So between whether it's centralized computing or distributed computing, these cars are going to become more interacted with the digital environment around them. Can you just, for the peace of mind of the people listening, can you talk a little bit to the, say, and I'm using a very general term here, the firewall issues, the cybersecurity issues, so that your car is yours, and if anyone's going to take it over, it's going to be you. How does that get addressed?
Well, I think if you talk to any cybersecurity expert, I think they're always going to say there's no system that's, you know, impenetrable. So I think it's kind of a situation where you're always trying to stay ahead of the perpetrators that want to access your vehicle or break into your home or whatever type of thing you're trying to secure. The perpetrators are always going to find a way if they're focused and dedicated on it. Now, of course, you know, there's things that Xilinx as a company, we're very strong in aerospace and defense, and I can tell you that my colleagues in the are very familiar with electronic warfare, right? And so you talk about cybersecurity, obviously being strong in the military space allows us to have all the leading edge technology that we can apply to the automotive space as well and other industries like industrial. But you know, security is always going to be one of those difficult questions. As you kind of mentioned, people will, you know, are going to always find a way, but we need to stay ahead of them. And one way, again, we can stay ahead of them, I kind of liken our reprogrammable hardware as like a lock mechanism. And we're probably one of the few companies, because our technology is reprogrammable at a hardware level, what that means is I can change the lock mechanism. So if you think of a door, a lot of people have a regular key. You can defeat that with picking tools. Later on, you might have a combinational lock. The perpetrators that might want to get in will find a way around that. But then you can have a biometric lock. But you know, our reprogrammable hardware basically is a different locking mechanism. So I can change my locking mechanism and stay ahead, constantly changing it. And so that may afford the cybersecurity guys some additional flexibility and advantages to defeat people that are trying to attack the vehicle.
So a little more of a buffer there between the individual and their vehicle and whoever might be trying to hack into it. And I'll say very candidly, I really don't live the kind of life where somebody would want to hack into my car. I mean, I'm a pretty dull guy. I don't know why anybody would target me.
Well, there's got to be an ROI, a return on investment for doing that, right? People want to break into
right,
homes
exactly.
And they want to secure something, right? So I'm not sure what they're going to do with my vehicle, but.
Yeah, precisely. So, but, you know, these are the things that get on the people's minds. Now, something you touched on that we certainly agree on this, let's just say it's 2030, and yes, there's fewer demand for taxi cab drivers, bus drivers, truck drivers. So economists very politely call that displacement. The people who lose those jobs just get angry, but that's understandable. I hadn't thought of an increase in demand for mechanics and people to do maintenance work as the cars will operate more. So that's certainly a big plus. Any crystal ball as to what other job skills might increase in demand?
Well, certainly that just if you think about all these, all these robotaxi fleets are going to have really a data center of some sort, operational center, right? So you're going to have people that are, they may even employ their own weather people, meteorologists, because they really want to know, should I, you know, there might be a point where I might have to ground my fleet, so to speak, just like, we ground air traffic sometimes, right? So it's a possibility that the robotaxi fleet at a certain point in time will say, look, the weather conditions are so bad, it doesn't even make sense for my vehicle to be out there. So you're going to have people that are data analysts, data center, operational focused, maybe a meteorologist. I mean, there's going to be an increase of different professions that are already existing, focused on transportation or mobility as a service, right?
I love the fact that you brought up about the weather, because we had a speaker a few weeks ago, and he said, the true definition of level five is self-driving vehicle in any environment, in any condition. So that includes rain, blizzards, hurricanes, take your pick. And this fellow, who is as on board with the technology as you can get, was very willing to say, and I think I even teed it up for him. I said, so it's a muddy mountain road in a rainstorm, on a steep, going around a steep mountain cliff or something. He goes, Jack, we're not making any promises about that. So I said, okay.
Let's put it in a different context. I mean, if the
Sure.
vehicle is smart enough, right, the vehicle will say, I'm not going to go down that road. I mean, that's what a human would do. A human would say, today is a day I don't want to be on a road. And that's why I said grounding your fleet is not a thing to be taken lightly. It's certainly a plausibility. I know when the weather is really bad, when the rain is so bad I can't see, a meter or even, 20 meters ahead of myself, what do most people do? They pull off to the side of the road and wait out the storm, or they park underneath a bridge. I mean, that's the same situation you talked about, a muddy road that had a curve to it, downhill. I mean, it's almost suicide to drive down that road, right? So I think
The car would know that. The car,
An
okay.
intelligent system should say, it is not safe for me to proceed. I can see that the weather elements are bad. It's a curvy road ahead. It's on a downward slope. I may not be able to navigate this dangerous situation safely.
So that's even better. To me, that's a better perspective on level five. It's not just driving in any condition, it's the intelligence to know to drive or not to drive in any condition, which I think would put people's minds at ease, probably a little more. That's terrific insight. So, Will, there was an article in The Economist, and I meant to look it up before we talked. I think it was within the last couple of years, about autonomous vehicles, their practicality, how close, and so far. But it brought up the very point that you brought up, that today the vast majority of vehicles sit idle for most of a 24-hour period. They sit in your garage all night, you drive 45 minutes to work, they sit in the parking lot all day, you drive 45 minutes home, and then maybe you run some errands on weekends. So a lot of our cars sit idle, but if transportation becomes a service, on the one hand, those vehicles on the road could be running much more continuously, but people might decrease their car buying. So could the total number of cars on the road kind of stay consistent? It's just that some people aren't going to buy cars. They'll rely on a transportation service. Or do we just expect more cars on the road overall? And that brings up huge environmental questions, CO2 and congestion and all the rest of
Well, you've asked a lot of very, very good questions there. I
it.
mean, first of all, I mean, on the environmental one, just let me take it on that one first. I mean, I think the net of it will be pretty close to zero, right? And why do I say that? I mean, yes, people are going to have transportation as services, but do we actually increase the amount of driving we will do collectively, right? So yes, the car we're sitting around, but and not being utilized very much, but now there'll be fewer cars potentially, but being utilized more. So, I don't think our behaviors are going to change because somebody can drive me there. Maybe the elderly might be a little bit more able to get around and things like that, but I don't think the amount of transportation will change that much that it'll be a negative from a carbon footprint standpoint. But, again, there's a lot of things that we just don't know. There's a lot of unintended or unexpected consequences. So, but my general feeling is you know, the same, there'll still be the same amount of driving going on. It's just that we may have fewer cars, which then you could make the argument with fewer cars, maybe you're saving the environment in that regard. You're not
Absolutely.
Manufacturing.
And that's kind of what I meant when I said, like, a, I forget if I used the word ratio or not, but the total number of cars might stay consistent. It's just a matter of which ones are transportation as a service and which ones are owned by individuals. So, Tim, your talk is, as we said at the beginning, it's August 29th, which is a Thursday at 11 o'clock. No doubt, you know, you have a lot of insight into this, and I'm not going to be at Santa Clara. I wish I was. But for the people who are going to be in your talk for that 45 minutes, what would you most like them to come away with? What bit of insight or observation would be most beneficial to them?
Well, I think they would gain the kind of an understanding of the technical hurdles that the companies that are working on robotaxis, what they're facing, and you know, what are the challenges that the semiconductor companies have in trying to helping them solve the technology problems that they're facing.
And just to kind of round that out, and you may or may not be aware of this, this conference, which for the benefit of our listeners, this is a first of its kind. There's never been a conference solely devoted to autonomous vehicles before. This has actually been in the works for 3 years by the people at Informa, and I can tell you they put an awful lot of effort into it. Will, for the people who are going to be there the whole 3 days, so start with the micro of your talk. Now we go to the macro of the whole conference. What should they walk out with if they're there the whole 3 days? What insights and observations do you think they should have?
I think I hope that they're going to see how exciting this marketplace is, the potentials that are problems that are going to be addressed. I mean, you know, autonomy is going to unlock a lot of great things. I mean, we're going to save a lot of time. We're going to save a lot of money. We talked about saving the environment. And, of course, most importantly, we're going to save a lot of lives out there. And I think Drive World is just an event that's helping pull industry experts together so that we can collaborate, just as we see the big companies already starting to partner and collaborate, like Ford and Volkswagen and Daimler and BMW, in terms of pulling their resources to address autonomy. You know, here's the opportunity of bringing an ecosystem of companies together to help support those OEMs.
I'm a little jealous that I'm not going to be there. I get to a lot of these events. I get to the ones in Anaheim and New York and Toronto. It just didn't work out this time around, but I certainly would love to be there. But Will, thank you very, very much for taking the time to share your insight. Obviously, this is a field you know a great deal about. For those who've been listening to this podcast, if you're an engineer, especially an engineer in anything related to the transportation industry or a designer or an industry executive, this is a conference you absolutely want to attend. And Will's talk, as we said earlier, is Car 2.0, Transportation as a Service, and he will be speaking in Santa Clara at the Convention Center Thursday, August 29th at 11 o'clock. Will, thank you very much for taking the time to share your insights today.
Great. Thank you very much for having me, Jack. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.